broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
The United States has always considered waterboarding torture, except
and it's all right to talk to the kids.
I think that's great, and there are a couple of appliances that I
could
use.
I wrote the book because I felt that some people were being demonized.
This is racist, man. Angry guy. Angry.
Fire.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Boy, I can just tell I'm going to get pissed off this hour, man.
Why?
Because they got this waterboarding thing isn't going to end, and now we got some jackass by the name of this Nadler. He's a representative who is looking to fill the shoes of Grayson, I guess. Grayson's, was the official pain in the ass in Congress. And the thing that bothers me about this is that this becomes ideologic, man. It becomes partisan. What are they talking about, you know? The Bush administration's Justice Department advised him, and the Obama administration Justice Department declined to prosecute Nadler. Don't rub it in, man, okay? Anyway, 877-876-PHIL.
Oh, you can say, go Nadler, yeah.
Right. Go Nadler, my guy. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show on the line here with me, or in studio, rather, is Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman in our news hour. Now then, today is Veterans Day, and I don't know. I was just saying to Rance and the guys, I said, you know, I just like to know the story about things. I think it comes in handy so that we can say, aha, this is why this is and thus and so. And so it makes a little bit of sense. But I don't know if you know that today, being Veterans Day, it began life as Armistice Day.
What's that?
Armistice Day was the last day of World War One. A long time ago, World War One started in 1914. It was one of, well, it until World War II, it was the single most devastating, unbelievably bloodletting war the world had ever seen. It was a horror. It was a horror for every man, woman, and child that went through it. World War I was even more, in many ways, violent and brutal than World War II because they were using poison gas. There was not the surgical techniques and the repairing of wounded men as we had after World War II. So a great many maimed, terribly maimed and injured men came out of World War I. The Canadians especially. You know, the United States didn't get into World War I until 1917, I believe, 1917, 1918. The Canadian Army was in World War One from the beginning, and the Canadian Army fought a lot of battles and won a lot of battles and really took the fight to the what were called in those days the Central Powers, which was Austria-Hungary, Germany, the Ottoman Empire of Turkey. Those were the three entities that we were fighting in World War One.
What do you mean an Ottoman Empire? What's that about?
That's what today is Iraq and Syria, and there used to be an empire. Or as our good friend Osama bin Laden called it, a caliphate.
Yeah, it was like official Muslim?
That was the official Muslim empire, yeah, and that was the caliphate. And that was what Osama bin Laden was bemoaning after 9/11. He said, we haven't had a Muslim caliphate since 1924, I think was the year he put on it. Well, actually what happened to Turkey in World War One is that their empire was destroyed. I guess it was officially declared dead in 1924. All that was left was Turkey. But at one time, Turkey controlled all of the Middle East, and it in and of itself was sort of a throwback to the days that the Muslims and the Christians did battle over Central Europe and the Holy Land. So wild things, man, really weird, wild stuff got put to rest after World War One. And so Armistice Day came on the 11th of November, 1918. That didn't end the death caused by World War One because there was immediately after that or concurrent with that an influenza epidemic.
Yeah, people got flu.
Yeah.
Well, what's bad about that?
In a time when we didn't have antiviral drugs back in 1918, so Spanish influenza killed 20 million people.
Man, no. You think about the Black Death.
No, I'm not, man. No, I'm not. 20 million people.
What? That's more than
the black bubonic death did.
No, it's about the same. Only this was global. The bubonic plague took out 20 million just in Europe alone, I think. But I got to get my numbers right. But the fact is, World War I was horrific, and Armistice Day was and is November the 11th. But as and in Canada, by the way, they call it Remembrance Day. You know, the Canadians have been in both world wars, but World War I, man, it was an ass kicker, and Canada was, I think, personally, Canada had probably more to do with the ultimate victorious outcome of that war than the United States. We had a lot to do with it. I mean, when we sent in all those troops and basically just, you know, turned the tide against the Germans and the Austrians. But Canada, man, was going to bat for a lot of years, and a lot of people died. There are war memorials in Europe and in Canada to the fallen Canadians in World War One. So anyway, when I was a kid, they still called it Armistice Day.
How long ago was that?
Oh, thousands of years, bud. Okay.
Yeah, it must have been a long time.
Yeah, thousands of years ago. When I was a kid, you know.
Well, I mean, what are we talking about?
In the 60s, they would say Armistice Day is the... And I think what happened was there's a whole generation of people going, well, what does that mean, Armistice Day? You mean World War One? They go, yeah. So I believe, and if I'm not mistaken, maybe, Rance, you can look this up, because these two idiots sitting here...
I got other things I gotta do.
Yeah, you do other things, man. I think they changed it to Veterans Day sometime in my lifetime. And so Veterans Day is to honor those veterans who are with us, and Memorial Day is to honor those who have fallen. And in Canada, they call it Remembrance Day, and I don't know what it represents in Canada. I'm sure it a little bit of both, given the numbers that that died, especially World War One. But in New York today, there were 20,000 veterans that were marching in the streets of New York, and they had 600,000 people on hand to cheer them, which is quite an impressive, I think that's an impressive turnout for a Veterans Day. And I don't know if they had a Veterans Day parade last year and what the turnout was. It seems to me that this year there's something in the air. I don't know what it is, but the American people this year have turned out in droves to say, you know, how much we appreciate our veterans. 600,000 people in New York, and there were a lot of veterans who were in the parade, and there were a lot of veterans who were just kind of watching the parade go by. Here's the New York Daily News speaking to veterans who attended the Veterans Day Parade in New York today.
Well, just the fact that the veterans are here and the military folks are here and the civilians are here to support us, that is enough to make me, you know, happy and be proud that I'm in the military.
I'm proud of being one, because this is what gave my family, when we first came to the United States, I was the first one to go into service, and it really helped my whole family by being a veteran.
As I was in the Army Reserves, I used to be, and I'm here to support the troops, those who didn't come home, those who are home, those who've changed, and it made a big impact on me, and I just wanted to show my support.
Here is John Liu, a New York City comptroller, honoring our veterans in an interview with the Daily News.
The veterans have put their lives at risk in defense of our way of life, American ideals of freedom and democracy. And it's one day a year that is Veterans Day, but all throughout the year, we honor them for what they do to protect us here in America and abroad.
So there is the Veterans Day thing that was happening in New York. And like I said, that's a lot of folks, man. I mean, they get a million people for some of those ticker tape jobs they have. But, you know,
I mean, just with people hanging out, you know.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if they were just hanging out.
Yeah. What do you mean? You just happen to be on the street and you say, hey, look, there's a parade.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
how many people on any given day are on in New York?
What?
How many people, if you just said stop and you counted all the people on the sidewalk, how many would it be there?
If I just said stop to everybody in New York?
Yeah, you like froze them. If you froze them up.
I don't know. There wouldn't be 600,000 crammed along. I don't think there'd be 600,000.
No, we don't know 600,000, man.
Yeah, there would. There's like 8 million people would live there.
You're talking about in what? No, man. What we're talking about here is a group of people, 600,000 people on Fifth Avenue, Jack. Okay, that's what you got to ask.
What?
You got to ask, how many people, if you froze everybody on Fifth Avenue, how many would there be?
Yeah, there probably wouldn't even be more than like 1,000 or something.
Are you out of your mind, man? If I froze everybody on Fifth Avenue, there'd be 100, 200,000.
No, you're just saying that, man, because when he said that number there,
let me see this thing. If you freeze everybody on Fifth Avenue, there's going to be 600,000 people. The point is, that's where the parade was. That's where the 600,000 people were.
Who said there was 600,000? Was it Glenn Beck?
Yeah, that's right. Glenn Beck counted them. No, he didn't, man. It was some the cats that organized the parade. I don't know. Why would they lie? All right, 877-876-PHIL. And then one more thing, the debate over Glee anti-bullying episode. That's right, there's a debate. Was it good? Was it bad? Is it right? Is it wrong? In the episode, there was a gay student who has been bullied, and the teacher says to him, stand up for yourself. And so when this young man is bullied by a football player who slams him into a locker, he chases the perpetrator into the locker room. They argue, they confront, and then guess what? The guy that was bullying him kisses him. So what we have here is an example of what the writers feel is behind a lot of gay bullying, and that is some closeted homosexuality among the people that do the bullying. That was the point. Now, one of the people that criticized this was some critic on the Huffington Post, Leah Anthony, she's got like three names because she hates her husband. I'm kidding. Leah Anthony Labresco, and she said, well, you know, he was bullied, and then they're telling him to stand up for himself and refuse to be a victim. Well, I don't think that's right, and this and that and this and that. She thinks that if a kid stands up for himself, he's going to wind up getting his ass beat because in bad school districts, she said, And the kids watch Glee and they stand up for themselves, they might take a shank. I disagree. I think if you're being bullied by someone and there isn't anyone around to help you, you should learn how to kick somebody's ass right up through their shoulders. How do you feel about that? What do you think about that there, Leah Anthony Labresco? If there's no adult around, there's no cop around, and you're cornered, what do you want them to do? I think they ought to get together and learn how to take a baseball bat and park it in someone's head. How about that? In bad neighborhoods, what are you talking about, lady? In a bad neighborhood, there ain't going to be a cop for miles to help that kid.
Yeah, but she's saying a kid fights back and gets ass kicked.
What is a kid in a so-called bad school district, according to this jive-ass, lily-white bitch that writes for the Huffington freaking Post... What is a gay kid in a district like that supposed to do? She says, run away. Uh-huh. There's one thing you teach a kid, how to defend themselves. Because if we've got classic examples of adults in these school districts, they don't know how to protect these children at all. And now we got this dumbass writing for the Huffington Post, and she says, run away. Oh, that's going to help a lot. So that's what I'm thinking. Jillian Mapes of Billboard magazine thought it was a great episode for a show that premiered with the premise of speaking for those who feel like high school outsiders through contemporary hits and Broadway classics. Speaking out against bullying seems sincere and appropriate. Last night's Glee was a social commentary on relevant issues. Word. And Lisa Respers France of CNN with the hyphenated name and all of that. She said, what? 877-876-PHIL. An attorney says a coach whipped students who misbehaved. And Amazon.com pulls a pedophile's guidebook when they find out that members of their executive board have been reading it on their lunch break. I'm kidding about that, but let's find out. The Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We look at ratings, and I think that when you hear that a show is rated number one or a show is rated number two, that's all you need, and that's probably all you need. But wouldn't you like to know what it means? I mean, we are forever on this radio show trying to explain to you what it means when a show is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 800. The TV ratings from last night, wait a second, man. What night is this?
Thursday.
Is this Thursday night? Yeah. The TV ratings from last night, Wednesday night, actually we're now into Friday morning, but you know what I mean, are as follows. In the 8 a.m. hour, 8 p.m. hour, forgive me, the 8 p.m. hour, the 44th annual CMA Country Music Awards show had 16.4 million viewers, 9.7 16 households. Now, forget about what I just said to you, but what I'm basically saying is the following thing. 9.7% of the households is what it had. Now, if you ask me, well, what does that mean, Phil, in relation to other households and other things that have been, you know, in the grand scheme? All right. The 44th annual Country Music Awards had 9.7 of the households watching television last night, right? Well, by way of comparison, the series finale for MASH had 60% of the households in America. Now, that's one holy hell of a lot of households, isn't it? In point of fact, the number one show of all time that was watched was last year's Super Bowl, New Orleans versus the Indianapolis Colts, 105 million households. They do not have the percentage of households, but they do have a share of 68%, which means it was probably somewhere lower than MASH. Maybe it was around 58% of the households. But the fact is, this was the most households watching, but it was a lower percentage of available. The point I'm making here is that 9.7, it ain't squat.
Yeah, but it's pretty good compared to everything else.
Compared to what? It just so happens that last night at 8 o'clock at night, ABC was offering the one thing that people were interested in, which was the Country Music Awards, but they only had 9.7% of the households. They didn't have no 60% like MASH had. All right. In the 9 o'clock hour, ABC, the CMA Awards. And guess what? They actually went up. The number went up. They had 10% of all the households, but still well below the biggest shows in the history of man on this planet. The 45th most watched show of all time, just to give an example, were the New York Giants versus the New England Patriots Super Bowl. 43% of all American households. So even the 45th most watched show is far and away higher than any crap that was on TV last night. Excuse me for saying that.
Well, man, you make it sound like it's all garbage because it don't come up near the what the other shows are.
Well, it's not garbage, but I'm just saying to you, man, it's not, you know, they ain't doing no big number. Finally, 10 o'clock hour, ABC won the night because guess what? The 10 o'clock hour, Country Music Awards again. And they dropped down to 9.6 households, the percentage of the households, but still much, 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 much lower than the big, big numbers that have been achieved in recent years by the big-ass TV programs. What do we mean by the big ones? Well, Super Bowls are generally among the most watched. There's a note here that says the final episode of, actually not the final episode of Dallas, the Who Done It and Who Shot JR. Those of us who were active in the 80s watching TV, sitting on our dead asses and staring at the TV set like me. MASH, Roots. This was the miniseries in the 70s that was wildly popular. Gone with the Wind, an actual telecast of Gone with the Wind in 1975 and 1976, kicked some serious ass, man. But this was long before cable TV had taken over and you could go to pay-per-view and watch Gone with the Wind until the cows came home. The Bob Hope Christmas Special in 1970, the 15th highest rated show of all time.
What? Who, I don't understand. You'd never have Bob Hope get not that many people now.
Because they didn't have cable, man.
They didn't have cable. They didn't have all the shows that they got now.
They had way fewer shows, okay? So there wasn't a whole lot to pick from. So if you're sitting there and you're watching TV in 1970, and it's either Bob Hope or something else, well, so they made their choice. But they, you're not, I'm not going to be flipping over to ID, man, and checking out to see, you know, part 16 on Ted Bundy.
You say that's what you see?
What?
You go look at Ted Bundy instead of the Bob Hope.
Yeah, yes, I would, yeah.
Wow.
What do you mean, wow?
Well, that's a...
What do you mean, wow? Yes, I would. I would watch a Ted Bundy special before I watch Bob Hope, not because I don't like Bob Hope, but I've seen about 9 million Bob Hope Christmas specials, and I don't need to see no more Bob Hope, okay?
Yeah, but I mean, a Ted Bundy... I don't know, man, that's bad.
What are you shaking your heads for, okay? Take it easy. What are you all, depressed?
It just seems bad. Why is it, dude?
Look at this guy's balling.
I don't blame him.
Oh, what a couple of babies. Are you serious?
Why would you do it?
Look at this guy. Because I'm watching Ted Bundy. You guys are putting me on.
No, we're not, man. It doesn't seem right.
Well, guess what, Charlie? That's my taste in TV. I got nothing against Bob Hope. I just happen to want to watch Ted Bundy instead. All right. And that let that be on my grave. Let that be my epitaph. I got nothing against Bob Hope. I just want to watch Ted Bundy instead. Phil Hendry. World famous Phil Hendry show, that pedophile book on Amazon. I finally took it off of Amazon. Like, okay. And then we'll move on real fast from that.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry show.
Experts fear copycat suicides after bullying cases. I just wanted to make this just as an addendum to the story on Glee. These so-called experts fear, quote, copycat suicides. All right. I wish that they were a little more responsible. The way they report these things, any kid that kills himself, kills him or herself, his or herself. This is a very serious and very tragic occurrence. The underlying depressions and situations that led into this need to be looked at, and we need to prevent it at other kids, you know. To call it a copycat because one kid killed himself and so let's all go kill ourselves sounds pretty stupid to me, but hey. The experts call it contagion when a suicide or rash of suicides inspires other to follow in an attempt at martyrdom or solidarity in death. Well, you got to be a pretty depressed young person to kill yourself, even if you, quote, think it's in solidarity. I don't buy that for a minute. Maybe you're depressed and you see someone else and you decide, I have to kill myself. You know, last night I was saying to the my pre-show audience in the 9 o'clock hour, because we do a 4 hour show here on our video. We do 1 hour before the show and then we do 3 hours of the radio show. But I read at night to fall asleep, as many of us do. And I get off the air at 1 a.m. Pacific time. I'm generally not asleep until 5 a.m., 4:30, something like that. I do a lot of reading, and I came across something from the magazine O, Oprah Winfrey.
What are you reading that for?
Because it was something I was looking for, man, okay? It was something that came up, and that was what was linked.
Yeah, well, you're not going to find, you know, reading that on a regular basis?
What do you guys care whether I'm reading Oprah's magazine or not?
Yeah, but she's, that's for women.
Will you guys shut up? No, it ain't just for, if I find something interesting, it just so happens in that magazine was an article written by a woman named Susan Klebold. She was the mother of Dylan Klebold, one of the two kids that the two terrorists, that's exactly what I call what happened to Columbine, one of the two perpetrating terrorists at Columbine, Eric Harris being the other one. And I read this woman's story, and I got to tell you, it was heartrending, and I felt for her, and she did not try to evade responsibility one iota. She talked about how everything that she believed in this world just was ruined. It was wrecked forever. She had to start all over again. She thought she, in one pretty, it was a pretty heart-tugging section. She said, I thought that if I loved anybody the way I loved my son Dylan, that nothing bad like this could possibly ever happen or ever be perpetrated by anyone that I gave that kind of love to. And she said, I found out different. And so I began questioning everything I knew about God, about man, about family, about everything. And she said that, this was a very unique situation for that woman and for the Harrises and for, you know, Susan Klebold's husband, because not only had they lost their sons, but their sons had been responsible for the murder of other people's sons and daughters. The entire community was like up in arms against them. So they had no one, man. They had no one. And I'm not, you know, making any excuses, but when it came to grieving and feeling bad, you go to the back of the line, Klebolds and Harrises, because nobody wants to know from you, okay? No one gives a crap about what you're going through because look at what your kids did. And they understood that. And when I was reading this article by Susan Klebold, she got it. She wasn't complaining about it. She wasn't pointing a finger and saying, you know, these people were unfair. She understood. She said, this is what happened. I mean, we had only ourselves, and we couldn't do anything. She said, but I had to figure out something. I had to I had to do something. I had to find out what I could do, you know. And this is when it got into a part of the article. Well, I have to say that I thought she was off track because she said,
I thought you were going to say how bitching she was. Now you're going to complain about it?
Shut up, man. I'm not. What are you talking about, bud?
Well, you can't say about all the bad things she done, and then or not what she done, but and then criticize what she doing about it.
I'm not saying it's not a criticism, man. You know,
why don't you shut up, man, and let him finish?
I'm gonna, but you're saying good stuff.
I'm gonna say good stuff, man. Okay, do you mind me, you know, finishing? I'm saying all the stuff I just said was good stuff. I'm just saying what she said was this. She wanted to look into, she felt the solution to the problem and the thing that she wanted to get into and really dig into and figure out the answer to, because once she did that, you know, was suicide prevention.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's wrong, man. I think that's wrong. I think she's wrong. I think she's off base. I'm not criticizing her. I'm probably, that was in 2009. This is 2010. Maybe she's changed. But, you know, that's squirrely to me because a kid kills himself or herself as the result of other stuff.
Yeah, but if she's going to prevent the suicide, she's going to look into what's causing it.
Okay, well, then you don't say it's suicide prevention, man. You find out what's wrong with the kid. Is the kid schizophrenic? Is the kid depressed? Is the kid manic depression? That's what you're looking at. You're looking at adolescent manic depression or adolescent schizophrenia or something like that, okay? What do you mean suicide prevention? What's that got? I mean, yeah, you're going to prevent suicide, but forget about that.
Yeah, well, that's the only thing that you know about.
The reason why she focused on that was because the journals of those two kids, that Harris and Klebold, they published their journals. And Dylan Klebold talked a lot about suicide, talked a lot about killing himself, talked a lot about being depressed. And so his mother read that and thought, wow, I should look into suicide prevention. And what she, I believe, should be looking into is this kid was borderline psychotic, man. If he wasn't fully psychotic, I mean, he was delusional. The other kid, that Eric Harris kid, there's only one thing you could do with that kid.
What are you doing with that guy?
There's only one thing they could have done with that Eric Harris kid. Put him in a cage. I'm serious, too. I'm being very serious now. Put him in a cage, and you say to him, Eric, we know what you want to do. We know what you're planning. You are not going to be allowed to do it. You're not going to be allowed to plan any of that stuff. In fact, you're not going to be allowed out of this cage until you learn that in this society, as much as you hate everybody and everything, you're not allowed to do the stuff that you were contemplating. Otherwise, you stay in that cage. That's the only thing you could have done with that guy.
You would never got away with that, man. That's against the law for sure.
I understand that, but that would have been the only way to prevent what that kid was going to do.
Well, I mean, they could have. What if they found out the plans and everything?
Well, that's what I'm saying, man. They would have found out the plans, what this kid was going to do. But that kid was such a psychopath, that Harris kid. He wanted to kill, man. He didn't care who he was going to kill. And what they wanted to do was blow that whole school to hell, man. That thing was a terrorist act. That's what they were doing. School shooting my ass. Those guys wanted to blow that school right off the foundations. And when the bombs didn't go off, that's when they went in with the guns. But when you talk about these suicide, why are kids killing themselves? Because they're sick in the head, man.
Yeah, but that lady, at least she's trying to keep a kid from doing it.
Bud, you know, quit being so, like, defending people and everything, man. I'm not attacking her.
Yeah, he's just worried, you know, because that lady lost her kid and everything.
I understand that, man. I'm not saying that Susan Klebold is some bad person. I'm just saying she's got it wrong, man. That's all I'm saying, okay? Video shows basketball coach whipping players. Now, this is going to solve teenage suicide. Beat them with a 5-pound weightlifting belt. All right. Attorney says video shows basketball coach whipping players. Does the video show it? Maybe. Do we have the audio? You bet. Would we play it for you? Of course we would. And we're going to play it for you right now. This is a school in Jackson, Mississippi. Some parents of Murrah High School basketball players have filed a lawsuit against Coach Marlon Dorsey, who they said whipped their sons with a 5-pound weightlifting belt. Jason Hubbard said he reported Dorsey to Jackson Public Schools for whipping his son as a punishment for not performing plays properly. He and another family are suing Dorsey, along with Murrah High School and the school district. In a written statement, Dorsey apologized to Murrah High School, its parents, and the school district. That ain't going to help. He's still getting sued because there's a payday coming. I shouldn't say that. Anyway, let's listen now, folks, shall we? By the way, is this wrong of me to play this tape?
Why?
Because it's going to be the tape of a coach beating kids.
Well, what are you saying?
Should I play it? You're going to be hearing a coach whipping kids. Are the people that are going to listen to this, are they going to get their kicks? Are you guys going to get your kicks? Am I going to get my kicks? Is this pornography? You decide. A six-second cell phone video allegedly showing Coach Marlon Dorsey striking a bent-over basketball player with his pants down around his... No, I'm kidding. A bent-over basketball player three times with a five-pound weightlifting belt for messing up. Wait a minute, man. Was that three?
Man, I thought the first one, man, sounded like I hit him with a barbell.
Let's listen to this. A six-second cell phone video allegedly showing three... How many times? Striking him three times. Yes, here it is. Wow. God! That's three, man. And you can hear the guy that's making the movie laughing. Attorney Lisa Ross represents some of the parents suing the school over the whipping incident. She spoke to CNN about the big payday she's going to get the lawsuit.
We believe it's illegal and it was unlawful for the coach to hit these students. In this particular case, the students had engaged in no misconduct.
No, it ain't a man.
They had done absolutely nothing wrong except run a basketball play incorrectly. And we believe that it's unlawful for any teacher to hit a student merely because the student ran a play wrong.
Is that a man?
No, that ain't a man. Lisa Ross.
Sound like a man.
It ain't no man, okay? Anyway, did you hear what she said? Not really. Okay, Jason Hubbard's son alleges that he was whipped by the coach. Hubbard also spoke to CNN saying that if students wanted to play on the basketball team, they would have to put up with the whippings.
The fear of not playing was very disturbing. They had the trust in the coach. And when having that trust went a little bit too far with the kids, putting fear into them. And for them to take abuse like that, I thought was very unfair. But the conversation that we had with him, he confessed that the whippings did hurt, and he only took them because he had to take them to play.
All right, and finally, here is local television in Jackson, Mississippi, WAPT-TV, speaking with parents for their reactions to the whippings.
And it's all right to talk to the kids for us, you know, when they're doing something wrong, but I don't think it's right for anybody to put hands on somebody else's child.
People look to the coach for help, you know, with their children. You know, if something went on, they say, well, I'm going to tell your coach, you know. They tell your coach, the coach gets you in line. That's how it was back in the day. But like I said, he wasn't doing number time, you know, tighten them up.
He don't need to lose his job, you know. Maybe this incident will teach him more on how to handle the situation than paling the situation.
That's a... it's heavy. All right, so there's that guy, and he was beating the crap out of people, and I guess that's just the way it goes.
And I'm like, oh, snap.
So that is that, and other news ahead. Are we taking a break? Yeah, we'll take a break. Amazon no longer selling that guide for pedophiles. Author defends pedophilia. This is the most vile story. I don't even want to do this story. But they've taken the pedophilia book off of Amazon.com, and the fact that people are buying it. Forget about Amazon.com. Who the hell's buying it? We'll be back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And I'm like, oh, snap.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
All right, this pedophile book, which I don't want to hear anything more about, it has been pulled off of Amazon. I don't know why Amazon might have taken it off, or the author, who is a very, very, very sick man. I don't know if he has a criminal record. I suspect that he does not, because he's out there talking about committing or making the commission of a criminal act, to wit, child abuse, easier. And he even goes so far as to say that it can be pleasurable for the child. So this is a terribly demented man. And he gets to walk around and talk this crap because, well, there's people out there denying the Holocaust ever took place. So, you know. But the book is off of Amazon.com. Now, as of today, this book, I am told, I'm not even going to give you the name of it. This book was outselling four books on the New York Times bestseller list, The Lost Symbol by Dan Brown, The Grand Design by Stephen Hawking, and Big Short by Michael Lewis, and oh yeah, The Partner by John Grisham. So what does that tell us? Now, there's people maybe buying it out of curiosity, maybe, I don't know why, but this book was outselling these four books. I don't know where those four books were on the New York Times bestseller list, but allegedly they were on it yesterday, and that book was outselling John Stinkin' Grisham. Man. You got that right. I don't know what that means. I don't know whether it's being people collect this stuff. Here it is, a pedophile book, man. We better buy it because it's going to be rare. I don't know why people buy it, but I got nothing more to say about that other than to say that this is a guy not unlike a Holocaust denier, not unlike you name it. These people that post bomb making instructions on the internet. You know, I personally think that, he's more dangerous, but the people that are 9/11 truthers, I think you people are right in line with a guy like this, because you're not about truth. You're not about helping to heal or helping to make things better. You're about lying so that you can keep your little game going. Well, this scumbag is about his own kind of criminal mind. You know, he's into his own deceptions. That's what all of these people are about. They're about manipulating life, manipulating facts, manipulating the facts of life so that everything comes out the way they want it to. So that George Bush caused 9/11, so that no Jews were gassed, and so that, molesting a child, it feels good for the kid. Criminals and the depraved who are not yet in a jail cell, for them, it's a game, and what they do is they attempt to manipulate life and fact and reality and somehow get us to doubt what we see as decent. Somehow get us to think, I don't know, maybe the moon is made out of green cheese. I mean, it stands to reason. One of the arguments they use, as a matter of fact, and this is the most dangerous statement you're ever going to hear from somebody. Here it is. You ready? When someone says, I mean, it doesn't make sense. When someone says that, or they say it stands to reason, or they say, well, anyone would tell you. No, that's not a proof of anything. That is somebody getting lazy. That's somebody saying, I don't want to investigate the facts, but I mean, after all, it would stand to reason that a child involved in a situation like that, right? And so they sell it, and after a while they sell it to enough people where we have to sit here and talk about this garbage like it's a legitimate conversation to have, which of course it isn't. But they don't stop trying, do they? They don't stop trying, man. They will keep on trying. They'll always stick their faces up there every now and again to see how many people can we bullcrap today. So they stick their little 9/11 truth argument. They put the little Holocaust denial thing going up there. Who shot JFK? And pedophiles, maybe they aren't so bad. And the NAMBLA thing. These animals are people who are trying to change the moral code, if you will. They're trying to change the basic genetic code, if there is one, on morality. They're trying to get it to shift just a little bit so their particular perversion is accepted. Even if it's changing history. So,
I don't know what you said, but it was pretty good.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate that. And that's all we have for tonight, I think. Well, we got a couple of more things here. Did we talk about those guys getting their asses kicked from that coach?
Yeah, but it wasn't all that interesting.
No, it wasn't. It was boring. Boring as hell. We've got a couple of other stories here. A father suing a school district for reading about, the school district reading aloud about slavery. He's black, his daughter's black, and he says that Black History Month reading has racially harassed his daughter.
I don't understand that.
No, I don't blame you for not understanding that.
What's that mean?
The father of a black student has sued a Detroit area middle school Detroit Area School District, rather, forgive me, claiming that his daughter was racially harassed by a fifth-grade teacher reading aloud from a children's book about slavery. The suit claims Jala Petrie's teacher at Margaret Black Elementary School in Sterling Heights read excerpts from Julius Lester's From Slave Ship to Freedom Road that contain racial epithets and racist characterizations, according to the Macomb Daily. The suit against Warren Consolidated Schools was filed November the 3rd in Macomb County Circuit Court in Mount Clemens, according to court records. It was filed by her father, Jamie Petrie, and seeks more than $50,000 in damages. District spokesperson Bob Freehand told the Associated Press that on Wednesday the school district hadn't been served. The reading was from supplemental material provided by a textbook. It was supposed to involve a positive discussion about the excerpts. But I guess the N-word was in there and maybe a couple of, other references. The lawyer Scott Combs, who represents the family, told the Detroit News that letters and calls to the district failed to remedy the family's concerns. Yeah, sure. All right, so no more of that zippity-doo-dah. Do you understand, man?
I like it.
Right. Phil Hendry's show produced by Jason Rantz. Technical director is Charles Wagon. Associate producer Dan Northcraft. Phil Hendry's show. com.
Phil Hendry.